British Sky Broadcasting presents The Ice Storm, voiced by Charlotte Strevens on behalf of MCS Agency, directed by Ang Lee. Kevin Kline as Ben Hood, Joan Allen, Elena Hood, their children Paul Hood, Toby Maguire, and Wendy, Christina Ritchie. Sigourney Weaver as Jane Carver, Jamie Sheridan as Jim Carver, their children Mikey, Elijah Wood, and Sandy, Adam Han Brid. It's pitch black. A commuter train silently waits on the track. The wheels and underside of the carriage are frozen and covered with icicles. The lights are off. There's not even a light shining in the surrounding countryside. A thoughtful-looking teenager, he looks younger than he is reading a comic, The Fantastic Four, in cartoon format with dialogue boxes around each picture. The young man is engrossed. He has a mop of thick dark hair with a heavy fringe, a slightly bulbous nose, unblemished skin, and big brown eyes. The lights go on inside the carriage. The train wheezes into life. It's gradually getting lighter outside. The wheels slowly roll along the track, crushing over the icy patches which have built up. The power cables above sizzle and crack as the train moves along, slowly picking up speed. The young man looks out of the window. He turns his head when he hears the conductor come into the carriage and walk down the aisle.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This train originating from New York's Grand Central Station is back in service. Next stop will be New Canaan, Connecticut. New Canaan, Connecticut, next stop.
The young man begins to smile and resumes his reading. His expression becomes serious. He stops reading and snuggles up in his coat.
In issue number 141 of The Fantastic Four, published in November 1973, Reed Richards has to use his anti-matter weapon on his own son, who Annihilus has turned into a human atom bomb. It was a typical predicament for the Fantastic Four because they weren't like other superheroes. They were more like a family. And the more power they had, the more harm they could do to each other without even knowing it. That was the meaning of the Fantastic Four, that a family is like your own personal antimatter. Your family is the void you emerge from and the place you return to when you die. And that's the paradox. The closer you're drawn back in, the deeper into the void you go.
In sharp sunlight, the train pulls into the station. A 40-something couple with a teenage girl wait on the platform. The young man gets off the train, huddled in his coat, and stands there, a smile playing around his lips. In class, the young man gazes longingly, he is besotted, at a very pretty student writing notes, sitting to his left around a large square table. She raises her hand.
The dilemma Dostoevsky claims here to have discovered goes to the very core of Christianity's relationship to the modern world. But it is a dilemma that... Yes, Libitz.
What Dostoevsky is saying here is that to be a Christian is to choose, because you have to choose of your own choice. And since you can't choose to do good because that'd be too rational, you have to choose to do bad. It's existential.
Thank you, Libitz. That's a very compelling summary. But of course, existentialism per se.
Walking down a curved staircase, the young man catches up with her.
Libitz? Hey, Dostoevsky. I'm also really a fan. And what you were saying, you know. Have you ever read The Idiot?
The Idiot?
If you like Notes from Underground, you'll love The Idiot.
Great. Thanks for the tip.
The Idiot. I'm in love with Libitz Casey.
Oh, come on. She's a poor little rich girl. Check out the jeans and fur look. And get a load of this.
Like, her mom and stepdad and stepsisters are going to Switzerland to ski over Thanksgiving break, and they didn't invite her.
How do you know this shit?
They did it last year, too. It's like traditional or something. They've got this humongoid place in New York City, and she just holes up there with a wad of cash.
You think Francis is gonna beat me to the punch here?
Since he sleeps with every girl you ever show an interest in, why don't you just keep your Libet's fixation a secret from him? You already told him.
I hope you changed the water in that bong from last night.
The water, as you call it, is a special mixture of amaretto and brandy blended for just the exact chemical interaction with the last of our precious Thai stick.
Francis lights the bong and Paul draws up a great lungful of smoke.
Oh, waste not, Master Hood. That was 20 for the bag.
Oh, I've been thinking, Francis. You know, you are one drug-addled elitist freak. And when the revolution comes, I do not want to be lined up with you and shot because you are fucking ripe for political re-education. You know, like in the fields.
Let me enlighten you about something here. You and I exist on two opposite sides of a great existential divide, that being your pathetic virginity on the one hand and my astonishing number of sexual conquests on the other. You're simply jealous.
Louis, telephone.
And remember, with your erogenous zones lubricated as such with the mighty herb, beware out there, because you're droning like a motherfucker when you're stoned.
Flame on, asshole.
Paul leaves the room. Francis tucks the towel back underneath the door.
Hello?
Paul?
Oh, hey, Dad.
Guy, how's it going? Everything all right up there?
Yeah, everything's good.
Well, good. Well, I'm just confirming, you'll be on the 440 on Wednesday, right?
I'm gonna come Thursday.
Well, you can't come on Thursday, Paul, because Thursday's already Thanksgiving. But a record which would only be disclosed... Well, that's the whole point of the holidays, Paul. So you and your sister can mope around the house, and your mother and I can wait on you hand and foot, while the two of you occasionally grunt for more food from behind the hair on your faces. Believe it or not, we actually enjoy it.
Okay, okay, Dad.
Thanks, Guy. First, hang on a second. Investigation should be thorough, Wendy, you want to say hi to your brother? And second, that if there were Wendy, any come on. Involvement, we should get the
facts out first. Wendy reluctantly stops watching the TV.
Charles,
have you been keeping out of my shit? Have you refrained from entering the sacred precincts of my room?
I haven't touched your stuff. Are you watching this?
Watching what?
Nixon doofus. It's incredible. He should be shot.
Hey, drop the political assassination stuff, please.
He's a liar. Dean told him on March 21st about Kalmbach and Hunt, all about the payoffs for the Watergate burglars. So you tell me where the so-called Dean report is, but you can't.
Right, the defense rests.
You want another?
No, thank you. We should be off.
Gotcha.
Knows that when the March 24th...
Charles, calm down. I wasn't in on it.
It's gonna sink. And the entire country will fall into anarchy. And the Symbionese Liberation Army.
Dinner's on the counter. We'll be at the Carvers. We know the number.
Paul, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Is there anything special you want? Any particular kind of food or snack or anything we can stock up on?
Nope.
No? You're all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah? Okay, all right. We'll see you next week. I love you.
Me too.
All right. Bye-bye. Wendy, we'll see you later.
Sleep by 10. Mean it, young lady.
Petite, curvy, and very pale, Wendy resumes watching TV.
I'm not too tired at night dictating my own recollections of the day. I think that perhaps will be the more accurate record of history in the end.
There's a dinner party going on at the Carvers. Their teenage sons act as waiters.
It was a benefit for the ACLU or something. Harry Reams himself was there.
The man with from Deep Throat.
The very one.
Classic.
Something about a First Amendment defense fund.
Ted took me to see
I'm
it.
Sorry.
Oh, Ted, how romantic.
You know, I have to admit, the movie didn't do much for me. Nice. But being in that theater, surrounded by all those horny young college boys and perverts, I mean, there was something in the air.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, problemo, Mikey. Don't worry.
It's okay, Mikey. No problem. Put the wine down. Just leave the wine in the table. Go ahead on in the kitchen.
Fine. It's fine.
Same, it's a paper towel. Okay. Sandy, help your brother out, okay?
The wine goes over Ben.
It's fine. Thanks.
We changed our couples group.
Now we're in some geriatric group. Though I must admit there are a couple of lookers.
But you two are still sticking it out with Dr. Pazmir?
Oh, actually, Ben decided that... Well, I mean, we both decided.
I just don't see what the appeal is. I mean, like Ted said, people go in there and they just get themselves all worked up and...
That's the point. Then they go home and make up.
But Elena and I, we don't go in for those sort of histrionics. About the only big fight we've had in years was about whether or not to go back into couples therapy.
It appears you won.
In the kitchen, Janie loads the dishwasher. Elena comes in with some dirty plates and begins to scrape them.
Oh, please don't. Don't bother. I insist. Don't touch them. Oh. It's really quite all right. Of course.
Uncomfortable now, Elena stops and leaves the kitchen. Mikey and Sandy are up on the roof watching through the skylight.
And to think, they met at a key party of all things.
A key party?
Oh, you know, it's a California thing. That scuzzy husband of hers dragged her kicking and screaming to one when they were out in L.A. You know, the men put their car keys in a bowl, and at the end of the evening, the women line up and fish them out, and whoever's they've got, they go home with. Anyhow, that's how she met this Rod person or whatever his name is. He's left his wife. She's packing for California, and Irwin is devastated. It's so ironic.
Ironic?
Well, yes, ironic. His name's Rod.
They're all in the living room relaxing. Elena laughs. Janie doesn't get it.
No, come on. He's like a big infected whitehead. I would never... Shit, it's my parents.
Wendy dives under the covers with the phone.
He's so gross.
My drumstick was still frozen when you, you know, cut inside there. Probably gonna get whatever that disease. I knew it. Watch this.
Ben yanks the telephone cord.
Dad, stop it!
Get to sleep, young lady. I mean it.
Fascist.
If I were a fascist, I would have sent you to one of those southern military academies a long time ago. Now get to bed.
She slams the door.
Hey.
Ben opens it. Wendy pulls the covers over her head. Ben goes over to the bed and sits down.
Hey, kiddo. Sleep well, huh?
Good night, Dad.
He kisses the lump under the covers. Elena watches him in the doorway. Ben leaves the room, closing the door behind him. In his plaid pajamas, he climbs into bed. Elena is lying on her side, eyes closed. He begins to nuzzle her hair. She doesn't respond.
Ben.
His hand freezes mid-caress down her nightie. He lies back down and switches off the bedside light. Next morning, in brilliant sunshine, the commuter train pulls right up to the stop sign at the end of the track, filling the whole length of the platform. Ben gets on the crowded train with all the other commuters. He sits holding open the pages of the Wall Street Journal, but he's absent-mindedly looking out of the window. During the business meeting in the office in Manhattan, he sits at the table with his hands folded neatly together on top, completely lost in thought.
I believe forced registration can reduce its cash position, especially during this period of stagflation.
On the grass outside the New Canaan Library, there is a tabletop book sale going on. It's an eclectic mixture, Doris Lessing, Sartre, Albert Camus. Elena is browsing. A man with loose flowing hair and a friendly manner comes over.
Elena? Elena Hood, am I right?
Yes.
Reverend Edwards, Philip Edwards, you came by and checked out the congregation a couple of times
last
year?
Yes. It was, I ended up
Oh, no need to make excuses. We're not for everyone, I know. But, I did think for a time that you might be someone who... Well, what I mean is that you didn't seem to think what we were trying to do is laughable, like some of your fellow citizens around here
about. No, I didn't think it laughable at all.
Perhaps you find in books what I try to find in people.
That sounds vaguely like an insult.
Oh. My, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way at all. And perhaps I meant it simply as a provocation.
She's a total young Republican. She said that you licked Dave Brewster's weenie in the third floor bathroom.
She's lying.
I wouldn't touch Dave Brewster's dick if you paid me. It's probably crawling with VD from when he stuck it in her, which he did.
Donna said that her brother and all his stupid friends were talking to her.
Puffing away, Wendy watches the boys playing American football. Mikey races down the field as the ball is thrown in his direction, but he's just not with it. Although he follows the ball's projection through the air in a sweeping arc, he stands there and doesn't catch it. It lands on the ground just behind him.
Mikey!
Stoner!
His teammate makes a pothead reference at him. Mikey turns around. Wendy is watching.
I suppose my reluctance was the group aspect of it. I've never been much of a joiner, although I still consider myself a somewhat religious person.
Well, I, of course, flatter myself that our church is not exactly what most people would call organized religion. At times, it's the disorganization that's liberating. And of course, I've begun to minister much more in what one might call therapeutic environments, in small groups and couples and one-on-one.
My daughter.
Elena interrupts him. She sees Wendy flying down the road on her bicycle. Wendy cycles right past. She doesn't see her mother. The wind is rustling through her thick, black, shoulder-length hair.
I haven't been on a bike for years. When was the last time you rode a bike?
They say you never forget.
Wendy cycles up to Varnum's pharmacy, parks outside, and goes in. Just inside the door, she grabs something from one of the shelves and hides it under her cape. When she turns round, an elderly, well-dressed woman is watching her disapprovingly. Wendy coolly tucks her hair behind her ear and insolently walks out. Wendy gets back on her bike and cycles off. She cycles over the pedestrian crossing. Sandy is coming towards her on his chopper bike. They stop in the middle of the road.
Hi, Wendy.
Hey, Sandy.
Mikey was looking for you.
Oh, yeah? See ya.
Sandy watches her cycle off. He takes out the action man from his pocket and shoots at her with it. In crisp autumn sunshine, Wendy freewheels down the middle of the forest road, a bank of bare trees on either side of her. Mikey is standing in the middle of a large, disused outdoor swimming pool, aimlessly throwing sticks about. The floor is covered with autumnal leaves. His expression is both moody and anxious. He watches Wendy walk down the pool steps towards him.
Want some gum?
Devil dog?
Chewy.
Did you tell Sandy?
Tell Sandy what? You didn't tell him either, did you?
Imperceptibly, Wendy shakes her head. She takes a step towards him. Mikey removes his gum and sticks it behind his ear. With no preamble whatsoever, they immediately kiss, like limpets glued to each other's mouths, but standing woodenly with space in between their bodies. Mikey puts his hands underneath Wendy's cape. The Carver's house is isolated, a modern concrete block built in the middle of the forest on a rocky clearing surrounded by trees. It is a flat-roofed building on two levels with huge windows and a wide patio balcony on one side, in stark contrast to the nature all around. In the guest room, under the sheets, Ben is thrusting away on top of Janie. They both climax. Ben rolls off her and lies by her side. Janie smokes a cigarette.
We were golfing. And, you know, golfing to me is something I'm supposed to enjoy. And I was on the goddamn golf team in college, so it's something one would assume I'd do well. I used to do well. But basically, these days, golfing for me is like hoeing or plowing. It's like farming. And George Clare has obviously, in the mere 2 years since he's been with the firm, he has obviously been taking secret lessons with a golf pro. And I bet the entirety of his disposable income has been dedicated to humiliating me on the golf course. That guy talks nonstop throughout the entirety of the miserable 18 holes,
Ben,
on topics that are the supposed domain of my department.
Ben.
Yeah?
You're boring me. I have a husband. I don't particularly feel the need for another.
You have a point there. That's a very good point. We're having an affair. Right. An explicitly sexual relationship. Your needs, my needs. You're absolutely right.
You better get dressed. The boys will be home soon.
Gotcha.
Ben leaves the back way. He skids on the bare rock. He straightens his mac and walks along a forest path which runs alongside the main road. He walks through the endless trees and autumnal leaves with not a spot of green in sight. At home, Elena fluffs up the rice and taps the wooden spoon against the side of the saucepan. Wendy comes into the kitchen and takes out some dinner plates from the cupboard.
Hello. Hi, Wendy. Funny, when I was in town, I saw you on your bike.
With Mikey.
Who?
Nobody.
Mikey Carver?
Well, we were just riding around.
Well, you looked very free when I saw you. As if I were seeing my own memories of being a girl. There was something internal about it.
Mom? You okay?
Of course, Wendy, I'm sorry. You must think I'm ripe to be checked into Silver Meadows.
You're not a psycho.
People at Silver Meadows aren't psychos.
I know. They're rich drug addicts and celebrities.
Wendy lays the table.
They need the money at school for my band uniform.
I thought you quit the band. I never hear you practice anymore.
Yeah, well, I don't really need to practice. I just play a few notes anyway, so I figured I'd just stay in.
Well, I'm sure your father and I would love to hear what you're playing these days. Maybe after dinner?
Wendy positions the music stand right in front of her mother and father, who sit on the couch, politely listening. Ben breaks up some ice cubes.
The Halfords have invited us again this year.
You want to go?
What do you think?
Well, it's a neighborhood tradition. I'm gonna go to bed.
So early?
Rough day. Good night.
Is that a new aftershave?
Yeah. Musk or something. You like it?
Good night.
Night.
Writing out a check, Elena does not look up. Her expression becomes suspicious. She tears out the check. Ben pours himself a drink. At the Carver's house, Mikey and Sandy are doing their homework.
Hey, Mikey.
Yeah.
Geometry?
Sure, anything but this English.
How come you're so good at math, but not at English?
I'm not good at math, just good at geometry. It's like, you know when they say 2 squared? They think it means 2 times 2 equals 4. But really, they really mean a square. It's really space. It's not numbers, it's space. And it's perfect space. But only in your head, because you can't draw a perfect square in the material world. But in your mind, you can have perfect space. You know?
Sandy smiles.
Yeah. But I just need some help with my homework.
Mikey picks up his geometry. Their father appears at the open door.
Hey, guys. I'm back.
You were gone?
Sandy looks at his brother.
Yeah, Mikey.
Yep. I was in Houston working on some great new ideas about silicon. It comes from sand. It's a semiconductor. So how you guys doing? How's school?
I don't know. Okay, I guess.
All right.
In his coat, Jim picks up his bag and walks down the hall to the bedroom. Janie is stretched out on the bed reading. It's a waterbed. After removing his coat, Jim sits down on it. The ripple effect nearly bounces Janie off her side.
Good trip.
You bet. Hell, we've got to trade this thing in for a normal fit.
Just be careful.
Jim gingerly tries again.
Have you noticed anything with Mikey lately? Kid seemed a little out of it tonight, huh?
Tonight? Mikey's been out of it since he was born.
This kid takes after me, huh?
Janie goes back to her reading. A wind chime tinkles. Mikey stands at the front of the class holding a piece of paper.
Molecules. Because of molecules, we are connected to the outside world from our bodies. Like when you smell things, because when you smell a smell, it's not really a smell. It's part of the object that has come off of it. Molecules. So when you smell something bad, it's like, in a way, you're eating it. This is why you should not really smell things in the same way you don't eat everything in the world around you. Because as a smell, it gets inside of you. So the next time you go into the bathroom after someone else has been there, remember what kind of molecules you are in fact eating.
The teacher's smile fades. During band practice on stage, Sandy's in the back row playing a triangle. He looks down on Wendy in the row in front, playing her trombone. He can see right down the back of her jeans. He is distracted by the exposed flesh at her knicker line, the goosebumps clearly visible on her skin. At Ben and Elena's, Elena wheels her bike out of the shed and cycles down to town. It's another beautiful day. She revels in feeling the wind blow through her red hair and in her face as she sails down the road. The trees on either side now showing signs of life. There is a small lake on her left. Going into the pharmacist's, she goes over to where the makeup is displayed. She inspects a lipstick. Liking the colour, she puts three of them into her pocket. She is spotted in the security mirror by the woman at the cash desk. When she leaves the shop, a male assistant quickly follows her.
Sir, did you forget something?
No.
Why don't we just come on in here? I think maybe you forgot something.
He guides her back inside. Paul is on the train reading his comic.
To find yourself in the negative zone, as the Fantastic Four often do, means that all everyday assumptions are inverted. Even the Invisible Girl herself becomes visible, and so she loses the last semblance of her power. It seems to me that everyone exists partially on a negative zone level, some people more than others. In your life, it's kind of like you dip in and out of it, a place where things don't quite work out the way they should. But for some people, there's something about the negative zone that tempts them. And they end up going in all the way.
Janie arrives home. Hearing a bang, she gets out of the car and looks at the back wheel, thinking she's got a flat tire. A pile of toy models on the garden table explode. Sandy goes over to inspect the damage. Using a lighter, he lights a fuse on a model aeroplane and launches it into the trees as Janie comes running from the front of the house to the back.
Sandy! You idiotic little dope! You could blow yourself fucking sky high with this demented crap!
She grabs him fiercely by the shoulders, which scares him. She relaxes her grip and taps his head with her knuckles. She takes the lighter away from him.
I'll take this.
You're not gonna tell Dad, are you?
Would it matter? What's this?
You know, just the whip. The one Uncle Frank got me from Mexico.
It's not packed with explosives, is it?
No.
Play with the whip.
Handing him the whip, she goes back inside.
You turned them all down, didn't you?
Well, I didn't love them.
Mikey and Wendy are watching TV in the basement. Janie comes down the stairs.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Mrs. Carver.
Mikey, have you heard the explosions coming from the backyard?
Sir, I want children very much.
I don't know.
Do you know what your brother's been up to?
I don't know.
A secret intention not to want children.
That's not true.
In disbelief, Janie shakes her head. She goes back upstairs. Sandy is whipping the leaves off the rose tree on the decking outside. Janie removes the frozen turkey and accompaniments from the freezer. Carrying a laundered shirt, she walks through the basement. Mikey and Wendy are still glued to the television.
You went to another doctor and got a prescription, isn't that true?
No, sir, that is not
excuse
true.
Me, don't you kids have homework?
No. Thanksgiving break. Adams,
if you deny... They're munching non-stop. The occasional table in front of them is covered with snack papers.
All right, I did. Is it a crime?
No wonder the police can't find out how the gang is transporting the stuff. They're using milk trucks.
There's some kind of detective program showing. Wendy puts down the tube of corn chips and leaves the room.
They're leaving. Return the scanner and follow the truck.
She meets Sandy outside the bathroom door. He's about to go in.
After you.
You can...
Hey, Sandy, what were you blowing up out there? Your mom seemed pretty PO'd.
All my model planes.
The ones you built?
Yeah. They were getting old. They couldn't fly anyhow. I'm gonna get a radio-controlled airplane for Christmas. I'm gonna stuff it full of M-80s and fly it into Mrs. Burgess's class and blow it up.
Well, I have to go to the bathroom.
Sandy doesn't move, effectively barring the door. Wendy can't get past. She looks over her shoulder, making sure no one can hear.
I'll show you mine if you show me yours.
Sandy stares at her for a moment and goes into the bathroom. Wendy follows him and closes the doors behind her. Sandy's eyes never leave Wendy's fingers as she unbuttons her trousers and pulls down the waistband of her knickers. Sandy finally looks up at her. With shaking hands, he undoes the popper on his cords. His fingers are unsteady. He slowly pulls down the zip. It's Wendy's turn. Her eyes are glued to his hands. Inches apart, they face one another. Sandy looks up at Wendy. He can't read her expression. Janie throws open the bathroom doors. Mikey looks up from the television for a second. Earnestly, Janie puts her hands on Wendy's shoulders.
Wendy. A person's body is his temple.
This body is your first and last possession. Now, as your own parents have probably told you, in adolescence, our bodies tend to betray us. And that's why in Samoa and other developing nations, adolescents are sent out into the woods unarmed, and they don't come back till they've learned a thing or two. Do you understand?
Wheeling her bike, Wendy walks along the forest path. Mikey rides up behind her.
I don't ever want to see you.
Then why'd you come after me?
Furious, Mikey immediately gets off his bike, turns it around, and cycles off. Elena returns home.
Elena, can you give me a hand here?
Ben is struggling to get the turkey out of the freezer.
Oh!
You're trying to get this turkey defrosted before tomorrow. Can you take this?
Oh. The turkey slithers out of his arms and onto the floor. Elena picks it up.
Here.
Ben takes it from her, puts it in the sink, and turns on the tap.
Oh, sure, I'm...
Elena goes over to the sink and turns the tap off.
Did you remember to pick up the cranberry sauce?
Yes. Yes.
Because, you like it on your turkey sandwiches.
I do. Are you? Elena, you know...
Ben.
I've been thinking.
Ben, maybe no talking right now. If you start talking, you're going to...
She kisses him cautiously at first, then with more passion. Ben comes down the stairs, buttoning up his shirt. Wendy walks in the front door.
I'm going to pick up Paul at the station. You want to come?
No.
What you been up to?
Nothing.
Putting on his coat, Ben picks up the keys and leaves. Wendy goes upstairs. She pops her head into her parents' room and sees the rumpled sheets on the bed. Carrying his son's bag, Ben and Paul walk from the station over to the car, a bright blue metallic sporty one. Ben puts the bag in the boot and they drive off.
So how's school treating you?
It's good.
Classes?
Fine.
Grades?
All right.
Anyone special? You know?
Uh-uh.
It's good to see you. We miss you around the house and all. But this St. Peter's, it's top of the line, eh?
Oh, yeah.
You know, Paul, I was thinking this may be as good a time as any to have a little talk about, well, the whole gamut, facts of life. As I tell you, there's things happening that you're probably old enough to digest.
Things?
Well, things that happen between a... Well, on the self-abuse front, and this is important. I don't think it's advisable to do it in the shower. Wastes water and electricity, and because we all expect you to be doing it there in any case. And not on under the linen. Well, anyway, if you're worried about anything at all, just feel free to ask, and we'll look it up.
Dad, you know I'm 16.
Oh, all the more reason to be having this little heart-to-heart.
Ben happily smiles at him. They arrive home. Elena comes out to greet them. Paul waves.
Paul,
I was wondering, could you do me a favor and pretend I never said any of that?
Sure, Dad.
Thanks.
Hello. Elena gives Paul a hug. Paul knocks on the bedroom door.
Hello, Charles.
Greetings, Charles.
He goes into his sister's bedroom and she closes the door behind him.
How are the parental units functioning these days?
Dad's doing his up with people routine. Mom really hasn't been saying much.
I don't know. Dad seems a little weird, you know? Nervous?
Can't wait till Mom finally opens her mouth.
Do you think they're headed for, like, the dustbin of history? Divorce court?
Well, they dropped out of their couples group therapy thing.
Is that good or bad?
Wendy shrugs.
May I operate the telephonic apparatus?
Why don't you use the one downstairs?
Well, I'm calling an individual, Charles, in New York, confirming a social outing for Friday night.
Can I come?
Oh, it's a one-on-one kind of date thing.
With who?
Her name's Libbets.
Libbets? What kind of a name is Libbets?
Is that my record?
Yeah, but...
You have messed with my shit, Charles.
It's a glorious Thanksgiving day. In the light and airy conservatory at the back of the house overlooking the extensive land leading down to a small river, Ben is carving the turkey. Paul lights the candles on the table. Wendy pours the wine. They take their places around the table. Sitting at the head, Ben pauses. He surveys the table and everyone around it. Paul shakes out his napkin.
Well, it's great that we can all be together. And this Thanksgiving, no yelling, no hysteria, especially with your grandpa not here, although we miss him. So let's do it right. And Wendy, why don't you say grace? You still love to say grace, remember?
Reluctantly, Wendy complies. She puts down the serving dish. Paul clasps his hands together.
Dear Lord, thank you for this Thanksgiving holiday and for all the material possessions that we have and enjoy and for letting us white people kill all the Indians and steal their tribal lands and stuff ourselves like pigs, even though children in Asia are being napalmed.
Okay. Jesus, enough, all right. Paul, roll.
Thank you.
Can I have a gravy?
Uh-huh.
In the guest room at the Carvers, Janie hands Ben a vodka.
Thanks. You having one?
In a bit.
She sits down on the bed beside him. Ben begins to nuzzle her neck.
You know, I think Elena might suspect something.
He breaks away. He begins to unbutton his shirt.
Maybe it's all for the better, you know? Yesterday at dinner, she didn't say anything. Has she acted funny to you? I mean, have you noticed anything?
Have I noticed anything?
Hmm.
I'm not married to her, Benjamin. You are. I think you have probably a better vantage point from which to observe her.
Yeah, but I've been working a lot lately. No, that's not it. I guess maybe we're just on the verge of saying something. Saying something to each other. On the verge.
I'll be back.
Janie gets up.
Hmm?
Birth control.
Right. Gotcha.
She leaves the room. Ben cracks his knuckles and unbuckles his belt. He drops his trousers onto the floor. Hearing no noise, he sticks his head out into the hall.
Janie?
He walks over to the window and lifts the blind. He doesn't understand. He lies on the bed, tapping the vodka bottle. He takes a swig and stubs out his cigarette. He puts the bottle down on the bedside table and puts the cap back on. He pads out of the guest room in his boxers and socks and wanders about the house. He practices his golf stroke in the minimalist glass and chrome dining room, floor-to-ceiling windows on opposing sides. He walks over to one of them and looks out, a trim, muscular man with lots of chest hair. He lies spread-eagled on the waterbed and undulates. He noses around in the bathroom cabinet. Closing the cabinet door, he hears a noise.
No one's here.
Mikey and Wendy go down to the basement.
We can just watch TV.
Maybe we can mess around. You know? Only if you want to.
I don't know.
Why did you, with Sandy?
I don't know.
Do you like him? He worships you.
What's that?
A rubber mask.
Oh, wow.
Wendy.
Of President Nixon, she pulls it on.
I won't take my pants off. I'll touch it, but that's as far as it goes.
A teenage body with a man's face, she looks macabre. Mikey walks towards her, unbuckling his belt. He checks over his shoulder. He unzips his trousers. Wendy sits on the couch. He stands in front of her. He leans into her. There's a lot of fumbling. She pulls at the back of his trousers. The grotesque Nixon mask with its bulbous nose and rictus grin. Mikey's anxious and strained features. Ben appears. Mikey leaps off her.
When worlds collide.
What?
4:30 movie. When worlds collide.
What the hell are you kids doing down here?
What do you think we're doing, Dad?
What do I think? I think you're probably touching each other. I think you're touching that reckless jerk-off, for God's sake, and I think he's trying to get into your slacks. I think at 14 years of age, you're getting ready to give up your girlhood.
Hey, hang on there, Mr. Hood.
Don't you direct a single word at me, Mikey. I don't want to hear it. I'll be discussing this matter with your parents very soon. Young lady?
Talking to me, Dad?
Who else would I be talking to? And take that thing off!
Then forget all the stern dad stuff.
I'm not interested in your smart remarks right now, young lady. Let's go right now. You and I can discuss it on the walk home.
Mikey looks wretched. Wendy marches straight through a huge puddle, drenching the bottom of her jeans, ankles, and shoes.
Look, kiddo, don't worry about it. I really don't care that much. I'm just not sure he's right for you, is all.
Wendy looks at him.
It's just you develop a sense when you're older if things are going to work out or if they won't. And sometimes it's not worth the mess.
It's sleeting on them as they walk along the forest path.
Your toes cold?
She looks up at him with her big brown eyes and nods.
Come on, I'll carry you.
Reverting back to a small child, she clutches at him as he lifts her up in a front piggyback, her arms and legs going round his body. This is my little girl, his eyes seem to say. At home in the bedroom, Ben takes off his shirt. Elena comes in with a fresh one.
Hey, should I dress for the Halfords now, or give me your...
It's up to you. I'd like to go early and leave pretty soon after that.
I get you loud and clear. Hey, you look nice.
Thanks. So where have you two been?
You'll never guess where I found her.
You found her?
In the basement at Janie and Jim's. With that weirdo Mikey. Not even a TV on. And they're on the floor. And he's got his trousers undone, though, thank goodness, she was still dressed. Well, I really let him have it. And Wendy came home peacefully.
So, what were you doing in the Carver's basement, anyway?
I was just dropping off a coffee cup. Jim left it last time he was over. It was on the dash of the car. You were, you know, reading. I just wanted to catch some air.
Oh, right, right, the mustache coffee cup. The one that was sitting on the dash.
Yeah, that one.
That one.
With suppressed fury, Elena walks out of the room. Supper that night is leftover turkey from the carcass. Paul comes downstairs.
See ya.
Stay out of trouble.
You'll be on the 10:30 train?
11:30.
Paul.
Oh, let the guy have some fun. What's the name of this girl with the fancy New York address?
Libitz. Libitz Casey.
Libitz? What sort of name is Libitz?
Just get a taxi home from the station tonight. It's supposed to storm.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Wendy takes her plate into the kitchen and puts it in the sink. She looks in the fridge. Nothing in there she wants. She grabs a candy from a basket on the top. Her parents are still eating. Wendy goes into the living room. She switches on the TV.
Tonight's coverage of the Watergate affair. In other news, outside...
We light snow showers.
Wendy changes the channels. She removes her shoes and snuggles up in the armchair with a chenille blanket.
Rapidly decreasing temperatures, getting down to around freezing by midnight. Drivers in particular, beware. It's going to get awfully icy on those roads. Have a severe weather.
What's for dessert?
See for yourself.
No advice from the experts, eh?
Elena takes some dishes into the kitchen.
Let's go to our now for the grim details.
A line of showers now.
Wendy tries to ignore the tension. Ben helps clear the table. In the kitchen, he scrapes the plates. Elena stacks the dishwasher.
Don't start.
Do you think I
have no idea.
Well, what's on your mind? I mean...
It wouldn't make for a pleasant evening if that's what you're after. I don't want to talk about it. Stupid mustache cup.
What do you mean?
Don't be dim. Lord, you think I'm so dense? You think I'm so dense? Now you want to be seen with your dense wife at the cocktail party. And you want me to shake hands with your friends and make conversation, and you're not going to accord me the respect of talking honestly about this? You don't really know what this feels like.
I didn't... Technically, it's not what you're thinking, Elena.
Please have the decency to at least not tell me what I'm thinking.
Angrily, she hurls the tea towel at him and walks out. In stony silence, they drive to the Halfords cocktail party. It's chucking it down outside. A number of cars are parked outside when they roll up. They find a parking space. Elena has the umbrella as they walk up to the door. Ben has to make do with his Macintosh. It has no hood. Their hostess greets them at the door.
Oh, Ben! Elena! Wonderful! Wonderful! Come in. Come on.
Great to see you.
Oh, it's up.
That's all right.
She holds up a glass bowl full of keys.
Would you Would you care to play?
Sue, Rick.
New this year.
They're speechless.
It's strictly volunteer, of course. You can put your cards in the library if you like.
Oh, damn. I've left the,
Oh, you...
In the car.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, right. We'll, We'll be right back.
Okay. Oh, Rob, the stuffed tomatoes.
She puts the bowl back on the stand. Ben puts his key in the ignition. In terse silence, Ben looks at Elena.
This just isn't the best moment for this.
I know. I had no idea.
That this was going to be a key party.
Yeah. Well, if we'd understood, we could have invented some sort of excuse. Did you see how stuffed that bowl was already?
Well?
I think we're here and we don't have to stay. We, ought simply to put in an appearance and then we can head home.
You have some marker. That's what I think. If you want to know the truth, you have some marker. You're going to put it on the house key so that Janie can find it. And then when I get back to the house, I'm going to find the two of you in there. And Wendy will be able to hear you. And Paul will be back, and he'll hear you, and I'll catch you. That's what
Elena,
I think.
Elena, it's not what you think. It's not some big plot. Honestly, I don't feel good about it. I don't know.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear a confession.
Elena, you're just getting wound up to get wound up.
So let's just go to this fiasco. If that's what you want. Let's just go on in. I'd rather talk to anyone else but you.
She grabs the keys from the ignition and goes back inside.
My dear, he wrote her out of the will, and now her attorneys are, and this was going on for years, her attorneys are trying to find someone.
Elena throws the keys at their hostess. Ben smiles weakly. She drops the keys into the already full bowl. Elena walks into the main reception room. Ben dabs at his wet face with a hanky. He greets people as he moves through the room. Ben reaches the drinks table.
Claire, George, Claire. What the hell brings you to New Canaan?
Well, it's funny asleep. I've been talking to some investors. A little outside venture, you understand, between you and me. But a scheme to manufacture and use styrofoam packaging. These little, it's a peanut-like pieces, really keep an item free from trauma during shipping. It's miraculous. Anyway, turns out that the genius behind the whole project is your neighbor, Jim Carver. How about that?
Jim walks in.
Well, isn't that a one in a million coincidence? Real dreamer, our Jim Carver, eh?
All right. Listen, I'm going to make a break for the hors d'oeuvres guy.
Right, see you bright and early Monday, a.m. Say, where's the wife?
In Rhode Island with the folks. I'm a free agent today.
Ben watches George cross the room. He meets Elena en route. Janie is lounging against the wall in the hall chatting to another man. Spotting her, then goes over to them. The other man pretty quickly disappears.
Geez, Benji. Well, here you are.
Damn right. Where the hell were you?
What are you talking about?
Don't bullshit me around, Janie. Jesus Christ. I waited around for more than half an hour, nothing but my boxer shorts.
And Janie,
Oh, hi, Dorothy.
What's all that about? What the hell happened?
A prior engagement overcame me.
What?
Listen, Benjamin Hood, I have obligations that precede your... from before you showed up. I mean, one or two good-natured encounters, that doesn't mean I'm... not just some toy for you. When I remembered some chores I wanted to get done before the party, I just did them, that's all. Because I wanted to get them done before I saw Jimmy.
Jimmy? Jimmy? I'm not sure how to take this. What do you mean, Jimmy? I thought you and your husband had...
How you take it isn't all that interesting to me, Benjamin. Sorry.
Pointedly, she turns away, looking out of the window.
I just can't believe you could be so...
She doesn't look back. Sighing, she's not as indifferent as she would like to be. Paul is sitting on the train, looking out of the pitch black.
Now approaching our final stop, Grand Central Station. Grand Central Station.
A smiling Libitz opens the door.
Excellent. We are waiting.
Francis is there, preparing a joint.
You ought to read this, Hood. Nixon, our leader. All you need know about the travails of life. Check out the checker speech stuff.
Francis? You gonna leave the seeds in there? In the binding like that?
All be revealed, baby.
Ordinary rain, but don't be deceived, Dan. When this falls to the ground, it's turning immediately to the hard, slick, and slippery stuff.
Significant sleet and rain.
Major.
Hey there, you young knight. Can you check on the mead? Can you sally forth and secure us some more mead?
Huh? Moisture, moisture.
Cursing to himself, Paul grabs three beers from the fridge. Carrying them through, he starts to remove the caps with the bottle opener.
Frankie opens his with his tea.
Hey, that's a sellable skill. Hell on the fillings. Oh, man. Everything's gonna freeze, you know? Big freeze.
Yeah. Paula, are you gonna get home okay?
Yeah.
Francis lights the joint and takes a drag. He hands it to Paul with a smug smile on his face. At the Halfords, Elena is sitting morosely at the table with her drink. Reverend Edwards comes in and spots her.
Elena?
Reverend Edwards.
He pulls up a chair.
Perhaps you might find it in your heart to call me Philip.
Here, I'm a bit surprised.
Sometimes the shepherd needs the company of the sheep.
I'm going to try hard not to understand the implications of that.
Her tearful reply embarrasses him. It wipes the smile off his face.
Forgive me.
He gets up and leaves. She turns round to stop him. Too late. In his coat, he rummages in the bowl for his keys.
I hope those weren't my keys.
Two guests observe as they walk past. Elena watches the Reverend leave the house. In Libitt's bathroom, Paul washes and dries his hands. He opens the mirrored cabinet above the sink.
Eureka. Volume Secanal Paragoric. Francis Davenport the Fourth, tonight you sleep the sleep of the just.
He takes the pot of pills and goes back into the living room.
And whence his young virginal maiden absconded?
I'll get to one of the other 20 or so bathrooms they got in this place.
Check it out. Not for the faint of heart.
Pharmaceutical, you are a god.
Yeah. One for you, yeah. And one for me.
Without hesitation, Francis swallows the pill. Paul hides his.
No candy for me?
Groovy. Young master of the revels, a treat for our hostess.
A
I don't...
What is it?
Come on, Paul, they share their wealth. I mean, you cut them from her mom's stash anyway.
Let's see.
Libbets, you really shouldn't mix and match, you know, with the beer. I'm gonna put them back.
Libbets grabs them.
Oh, far out, Polly. Hey, look, these expired like 5 months ago. Think they're better aged?
Maybe you should just have a half.
Thanks for the advice, Dad.
All right.
She knocks it back with a slug of beer. At the Halfords, Ben fills a tumbler with ice and pours in a large measure of vodka.
Benji, feeling no pain. The Indian saying goes, pain is merely an opinion. Hey, check it out. Maria Conrad brought her son.
Maria's son could be anything between 18 to 25.
Wish some of the gang had brought their daughters.
Ben shuts his eyes for a second, struggling with the implications of that thought. In colourful toe socks, Wendy wiggles her feet as she watches TV. It's Mikey.
Hood residence.
Your parents at that party?
Yeah. Yours?
You get in trouble?
I don't know. I can't really tell yet.
Sorry if I got you into trouble.
Sandy's listening in, though he's watching TV.
I'm gonna check out the ice storm. Wanna come?
Sandy glances up at Mikey. Sitting on the floor, slumped up against the drinks cabinet, Libbets and Francis are off their faces. Paul sits in an armchair, looking into space. Sandy is watching some kind of science fiction program. Mikey zips up his orange Dayglow puffer jacket and ties the hood snugly.
Where are you going?
Out.
It's freezing.
Yeah.
Then where are you going?
When it freezes, I guess it means the molecules are not moving. So when you breathe, there's nothing in the air, you know? To breathe into your body. Molecules have stopped. It's clean.
Mikey goes outside. Clutching his action man, Sandy watches his disappearing figure through the icy glass. At the Halfords, Janie's being chatted up by Maria's son.
When you're asking yourself this question, what is...
Oh, wait, this is the training where they don't let you go to the bathroom?
That was the hard part, but I did it.
Foot. The foot. Toe clipper man.
Burbling, Francis suddenly collapses. Libbets covers him with a throw and weaves her way over to Paul.
I guess he's just real exhausted from, you know, tests and stuff.
Libbets sits at Paul's feet. She struggles to keep her eyes open.
You know, Libbets, I really feel, you know, like a real connection to you.
You don't even know me, really.
Sure I do. Like your aura that you give off.
My what?
It's like very positive. And, I feel a real special feeling for you.
I have a special feeling for you, too. Because I do. Special.
You do?
Yeah. To me, you're just like... I feel for you like you're my own... You're just like a...
Paul knows what's coming.
Brother. Yeah, you're not alone with that line.
I
do. You are.
Right. That's cool. So, how about we take a bath together?
Here, buddy. A bath. like a brother and sister.
She hauls herself unsteadily to her feet. She collapses on top of him. Horrified, he sits there looking at the back of her head, face down in his groin. All his hopes have gone out the window for this beautiful girl with her head between his thighs. His hand hovers in midair. Wendy leaves the house via the back way and walks along the path. She crosses the footbridge over the small river separating their house from the forest. The rain ferociously beats down on her, saturating her hood and cape, making the leaves sparkle and glisten. At Mikey's, she slides open the patio doors. A television is blaring.
Hello?
She noses about in the fridge as she walks past it. Clutching her wet cape, she walks into Sandy's bedroom, puts her coat down and picks up a Toby mug filled with pens. Sandy comes up behind her.
Wendy? Sandy, you scared the shit out of me.
What are you doing?
I just thought I'd stop by.
Mike's out. I think he went to Silver Meadow. See if you were hanging around there.
Yeah.
At the Halfords, a couple leave, rummaging for their keys in the bowl first.
Okay, everyone, we have a little business to attend to now. So, everyone who'd like to stay, please gather in the living room. Knock, knock.
She picks up the bowl, knocking on one of the doors in the hall en route.
All right, everybody, I've got the bowl. And we're going to start now. So don't go anywhere.
Ben slowly ambles down the hall looking for Elena. He finds her sitting in an armchair in front of an open fire in the drawing room. He sits down in the empty chair next to her.
You ready to go?
She glances up at him.
We're not going anywhere.
Janie emerges from the room in the hall. She deliberately lets them see her tighten her belt and smooth her hair. Taunted, Elena gets up and goes into the living room. In his snow boots, Mikey carefully puts one foot in front of the other. He cracks the ice which has already formed along the length of the diving board. He walks to the very end and bounces up and down. Tentatively at first, it's very slippery. His confidence grows. He deliberately pushes his luck, jumping that little bit higher, continually having to readjust his balance. Sandy shows off his action man.
Check this out. He's supposed to say all sorts of stuff, but he's kind of malfunctioned.
Mayday, mayday, get this message back to base.
Same thing again and again. It's gonna get a lot colder tonight, I predict. Maybe even a blackout.
Mayday, mayday, get this message.
Do you have candles in your house? I know where the candles are. And I know where every emergency exit is on this floor.
Wendy smiles. Sandy ties a knot in a shoelace.
This knot's called the hangman's noose. Let's hang him.
Wendy holds up the action man. Sandy drops the noose over the helmeted head. She takes the slack from Sandy and dangles the action man in the air.
He's dead. If it wasn't raining, we could take him outside and blow him up.
He wouldn't blow up. He'd just get all mangled or twisted.
She lies the doll on the bed and opens up the shirt and trousers. Exposing the plastic chest, but no genitals.
Well, looks like someone got to its private parts before us.
Communist Viet Cong.
I left it in the jungle.
With her big brown eyes, Wendy coquettishly looks up at Sandy.
Can I get in your bed? With you?
Sandy instantly becomes tense. His hand is like a claw on the bed cover. Wendy gently covers his hand with hers. At the Halfords, the men arrange themselves on the couch and chairs on one side of the room, the women on the other. The bowl is on the glass coffee table between them.
Well, what shall the order be?
Nervous giggling erupts. Elena is like a stone.
Alphabetical. In order of appearance.
Golf handicap. Most handicap does the honors.
Ladies, isn't this really up to you?
That's one of us.
Oh, hell, I'll go first.
Maria steps forward and plunges her hand into the bowl. Maria's son is watching.
And the winner is...
The lucky man owns up. They go off together.
Good night.
Good luck.
Okay, here goes.
Okay, Barry.
The ice is forming thick and fast, leaves with frozen drops on the end, lacy ice patterns that crisscross over the bushes, icicles that hang from the bare branches. At the Carvers, Wendy goes into the guest room. Sandy follows her. There's a bottle of vodka on the bedside table.
Want a drink?
Vodka?
You never tasted the stuff?
She pours him a glass and hands it to him. She drinks from the bottle. The vodka catches at the back of Sandy's throat.
Try again.
He drinks some more.
It feels warm.
One more shot.
She refills his glass. She puts the bottle down and takes his glass.
Under the covers.
She puts his glass down and, fully clothed, they scramble under the covers. They pull the sheet up over their heads.
Get him up.
There is much fumbling. From under the covers, a skirt appears. Then a shirt, a sock, all dropped on the floor. Then their faces emerge, all pink and rosy-cheeked. They lie on their backs, looking at the ceiling, their necks and shoulders naked.
Have you ever had a nocturnal emission?
Huh?
It's when you wake up and you find this pool of sticky stuff. Like, after a sexy dream. They haven't told you about this stuff yet. On what planet are you living on?
Smiling all over his freckly face, Sandy gives her a little kiss on the cheek.
I love you.
It's nice. Are you drunk?
I don't know. How do I know?
I don't know either. You spin around when you lie down, I think.
Sandy closes his eyes and then opens them.
I don't think I'm spinning.
He closes his eyes again and falls asleep. When Wendy realizes that he's gone, she snuggles up against him and goes to sleep too. Paul is gazing down at the back of Libby's head, her face still in his lap. He carefully lifts up her head, wondering how to move her without hurting her. Frances is out cold on the floor. Paul scoops Libby's up under each arm. She's like a rag doll and a dead weight with it. He does a bit of lifting this and adjusting that before he can drag her in a very ungainly manner a few feet away from the chair. He nearly loses his balance. It's too much. He lets her fall to the floor in a heap. Her hair is splayed out on the carpet like a mermaid. Towering over her, he lovingly caresses each side of her face. When he looks at his watch, it's 11:15. He leaves her on the floor and runs. It's getting tense at the Halfords. The keys are dwindling fast. A very overweight lady with a saucy grin takes her turn. The men all look at each other until George owns up.
How did you guess?
Huh?
Let's go. Gentlemen. Good night.
Night, George.
Ladies,
night.
Sleep well, George.
Oh, my own husband. Isn't that against the rules?
Try again.
No, thanks. That's fine.
That was too easy.
Getting down to the wire.
Four ladies are left. Janie steps forward and stubs out her cigarette. Jim looks at the floor. Elena is standing rigidly behind the couch with her arms folded. Janie slowly picks out a key. Maria's son stands up.
Hey. No.
Ben lurches to his feet and falls over.
Okay.
Janie goes off with the boy. Ben realizes he's made a fool of himself.
Sorry. The bathroom?
Yeah.
It's right down the hall.
Up we go. Hang on.
He's helped to his feet. Paul takes the steps at Grand Central Station as fast as he can. He charges down the runway leading onto the platform. And leaps onto the train as the doors close. Soaking wet, he collapses onto one of the seats. At the Halfords, another couple pair up and leave. Elena and Jim are the only ones left.
Well, I have to say, I don't have much faith that my car keys are still in that bowl. Doesn't seem very safe leaving your car keys laying around.
Jim gets off his perch on the side of the armchair and sits on the couch.
Not me.
Elena fishes them out for him. She sits on the couch next to him and hands him the keys. It's a bit strained between them.
Thanks. Oh, I don't think so.
kind of a discouraging evening.
Well, you couldn't have hoped for much better when you came up the walk.
Somehow it seemed different in my imagination when I thought about it. Actually, I didn't think about it at all, really. You want some coffee or something? Elena, the fact that we're neighbors, close friends, well, it makes all this seem a little strange, don't you think?
My husband is probably passed out in the bathroom, or at least he wishes he were. I've been married to him for 17 years, and I have no intention of going in there to get him. So what I'm proposing is that since your wife went off with a boy and since you are here alone, I'm proposing that you and I do what makes sense. Stay warm, pass some time, that's all. Now, don't make me feel as if I'm being too forward. If you don't...
Hey, let's go for a drive.
Okay.
Sharing Elena's umbrella, they pretty much slide down the icy driveway to the car. Jim has to bang on the passenger door to open it. It's jammed with ice. By the time he gets into the car, he's soaked. The rain is dripping off his nose and chin. He turns to Elena. She smiles at him. He slowly slides across the seat towards her, leans in, and kisses her. He breaks away, unsure.
Do these seats go back?
Jim presses a button and the seats recline. He kisses her again, unbuttoning her coat and fumbling at his trousers at the same time. Elena wraps her legs around his waist. They end up horizontal across the seats. He climaxes.
It was awful. Really awful. I'm so sorry.
Awkwardly, they break apart and rearrange themselves. Elena pulls her long skirt back down over her knees. Neither of them know what to say to one another.
Look. Can you wait here a sec? I need to tidy up. Just a minute. I'll be right back. You'll wait?
Of course.
Elena goes back inside the Halfords. She drops her umbrella and bag on the stand and walks down the hall. She stands for some minutes outside the bathroom before opening the door.
Elena.
Ben is sitting slumped up against the wall next to the lavatory. Elena sits on the seat and picks up his hand.
Try.
talk in the morning.
We'll talk in the morning.
She smooths his hair. He smiles. She slowly walks away, a pained expression on her face. Reaching the door, she turns around and looks at him. He hasn't moved. She leaves the door ajar. Jim drives Elena home. Coming round the bend along the forest road, the car skids on some black ice. The car slides off the road and into the trees, finally coming to a halt.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Jim revs the engine. The car's stuck. The ice covering the bushes is now solid. Returning home, Janie slides open the doors and closes her umbrella. Stepping inside, she slides them shut. She puts the umbrella on the floor and slips off her boots. Clutching her coat protectively in front of her, she walks through the basement. She stands outside the guest room. The door is slightly open. She doesn't go in, but turns around and goes into the bedroom. She removes her wooden beaded necklaces and lays them on the bedside table. Fully clothed, she crawls onto the waterbed and lies in a fetal position, huddled up with a dressing gown. She curls up even smaller. The wind chime is frozen solid. The moon is clear and bright. Mikey hops and jumps over the frozen grass. He slips and slides, losing his balance and nearly toppling over. He stops and looks up at a huge tree, all silvery in the moonlight, its branches frozen and tinkling in the wind. It's crystallized beautifully. Mesmerized, Mikey stares at it. He lies on his back and, like a sledge, propels himself down the middle of the icy road. He picks himself up and sits on the steel crash barrier on the side of the road, which is fringed with icicles. Mikey notices that a street light and some power cables have come down. The cables are strung across the road like a rope. Mikey watches them swinging gently. Suddenly, one of the cables snaps. It sparks like a firework, swishing, snaking and dancing unpredictably all over the road. He is enthralled. The cable explodes against the crash barrier. Mikey's back stiffens, a surprised expression on his face. Without making a sound, he falls forward. Face down, like a mummy in his quilted jacket, he slides along the icy road for a few feet and then stops. On the train, Paul is reading The Fantastic Four, his feet propped up on the seat in front of him. The carriage lights go off, plunging him into darkness. The train comes to a halt. Paul looks around, wondering what the problem is. Paul settles back down to wait. At the Halfords, Ben retrieves the remaining set of keys from the glass bowl. Shining a torch, Jim and Elena pick their way through the trees back to his house.
When you think about it,
It's not easy to keep from just wandering out of life. It's like someone's always leaving the door open to the next world. And if you aren't paying attention, you could just walk through it. And then you've died. That's why in your dreams, it's like you're standing in that doorway, and the dying people and the newborn people pass by you and brush up against you as they come in and out of the world during the night. You get spun around, and in the morning, it takes a while to find your way back into the world.
Jim and Elena come through into the kitchen. He switches on the lights. They don't work.
Phone's out. Place.
He turns on the tap. No water.
Why don't you put on some dry socks? And there are some rain boots in the guest closet back there. Last room downstairs.
Thanks.
Opening the door, Elena looks down on the sleeping forms of Wendy and Sandy wrapped in each other's arms. Wendy wakes and looks up at her mother.
Get dressed.
Elena leaves the room. Driving home, Ben sees something in front of him caught in his headlights. It's orange and lying at the side of the road. He stops the car. With mounting horror, he realizes what it is and slowly gets out of the car. Filled with dread, he walks towards the body. He skids on the ice. He looks up at the bent streetlight, the cables draped across the road. He bends down and rolls the body over. Shocked, he sits back on his heels. Mikey's face is an awful blue-black colour. He looks up at the sky and then puts a shaky hand over Mikey's mouth to see if he can feel any breath. Soberly, he lifts him up into his arms. It's not easy. He does it in stages. Ben straightens up with him. He stands there for a few moments. The lights suddenly go on in the train. Paul looks up from his comic. The wheels slowly move over the icy track. Paul smiles to himself. The conductor appears and makes his way down the carriage.
Ladies and gentlemen, this train originating from New York's Grand Central Station is back in service. Next stop will be New Canaan, Connecticut. New Canaan, Connecticut, next stop.
Paul resumes his reading, then abandons it. He looks out of the window. He pulls his coat tighter about him and sits back, a pensive expression on his face. In the clear morning light, the icicles hang from the boughs. In the guest room, Jim sits on the adjacent bed watching his son, who is fast asleep.
Jim! Janie!
Ben calls out, then lays Mikey down on the decking. Wendy and Elena slide back the doors. Ben watches Wendy's reaction.
Ben.
Wendy's face is ashen. She doesn't speak. Jim comes out and stops dead.
Jim, he was just up in Silver Lane. I think a power line.
Jim kneels down and gathers Mikey up into his arms, then helps him. Jim carries him indoors. Ben and Elena let him. They don't move or say anything. Sandy, now dressed, comes running in and watches his father lay his brother down, unzip his puffer jacket and rip off his gloves. Ben and Elena can't watch. Jim lays his head on Mikey's chest. Distraught, he weeps against Mikey's neck. Wendy takes a step towards Sandy. He jerks back as if he's been burnt. Wendy puts her arms around his rigid body and holds him tight. Tears stream down Sandy's cheeks. Wendy releases him. Ben and Elena are still standing outside. Elena puts her hand over her mouth. Jim's car is where he left it when it skidded off the road, half in and out of the trees. Curled up on her side, Janie is woken by the sound of weeping. Eyes open, she lies there listening, not moving. The trees in Silver Meadow are bathed in ice. The whole forest looks as if it's been sprayed with silver paint. Ben's blue car slowly winds its way along the road. In brilliant sunshine, the front of the train slowly draws into the station. Then Wendy and Elena wait on the platform. A passenger gets off first, then Paul. He stops and looks to his left, drawing his coat about him. He turns to his right and sees them, their expressions grave. He slowly grins. He climbs down the steps and walks towards them. Ben gathers him into the bosom of the family. They all walk across to where he's parked the car and get in. Ben doesn't drive off straight away. Elena looks at him. Ben swivels round to look at Paul sitting in the back. Innocently, Paul looks back at him, his eyes bright and clear. He smiles. Wendy is tearful. His father's eyes fill up. He turns away and grips the steering wheel. His shoulders begin to shake.
Ben.
Elena puts out her hand and touches his shoulder. Paul is disconcerted. The end.
Thank you. space. Can I see the family smile?
Just can't see.